What is going on, everybody? This is Jimmy, and this is another episode of the Horrific Podcast. We have a lot of cool stuff to go over for you today. Most importantly, we are going to talk about upcoming events, where everything is, where everything stands, and how excited we all are for all of it. The meat and potatoes of today will be centered around the Composers Roundtable that took place at Halfway to Halloween. Starting to get into the Halfway to Halloween content in between having interviews scheduled that we did earlier on this summer. This is where we are at for Sinister Creature Con this year, though. In August 15th, man. I'm so excited. Sinister Creature Con returns. This time, though, Roseville is where Sinister Creature Con will be. And I cannot wait for this year's lineup. Sinister Creature Con, of course, we are the proud panel production team of Sinister Creature Con, and we cannot wait to return to see you guys live at Sinister Creature Con. Sinister Creature Con, right now we have Crazy Bone from Bone Thugs in Harmony, Gary Toyama from The Phantom and Showdown in Little Tokyo, Greg Sestero from The Room, author of The Disaster Artist, Tommy Lee Wallace, director of the It miniseries, Fright Night 2, Halloween 3, Marlon Taylor from the It miniseries, Don Shanks, he was in the Grizzly Adams films, as well as playing Michael Myers in Halloween 5. We got Brian A. Prince from Black Panther and the Predator, the classic special effects and makeup artist, V. Neal, Beetlejuice, Mrs. Doubtfire, Batman, Ed Wu, just to name a few, Bob Elmore, Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Noah Hathaway from Neverending Story, Newt from Aliens, Carrie Henn, Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story, Andrew Nelson, Darth Vader, Alan Fernandez, who was a Sand Raider, Eric Walker from Battle for Mendor and Caravan of Courage, Nikki Botello, who was in Battle for Endor and also Mandalorian Season 1 and 2, Denzel Whitaker, just to name a few, Stephen Joffries from Fright Night and 976 Evil, Alan Trutman from The Return of the Living Dead, William Butler from Friday the 13th, from Leatherface and Night of the Living Dead, Lord Bloodlaw, Miss Misery. I mean, the list really just goes on and on, man, for Sinister Creature Con this August 15th, and just a couple of weeks. And the following coverage, obviously, will be Sinister Creature Con panels that we produced will be the meat and potatoes on kind of the following shows, but a lot of good stuff coming from all the times we have had at Sinister Creature Con, of course. And after Sinister Creature Con, though, it's almost time to dive completely and wholeheartedly into this year's haunt season, man. And I cannot wait to get back to haunt season. And haunt season this year is bigger and badder than ever. This year we do more than we have ever done. And we can now announce haunt season officially kicks off at Boo Bash in Orlando at the Magic Kingdom September 10th. We will be there September 11th. We will be at Hollow Scream in Orlando September 11th. We will also have a team at Oogie Boogie Bash in Disneyland. September 13th, we'll be playing the HHN3 game. September 14th, we'll be playing the Grotty's Horror Houses game on Roblox. September 17th on Roblox, HHN4 in the vault will be there. September 19th, brand new game, Roblox, Dark Manor. September 24th at the Cabana Bay Hotel in Orlando, we will be there at the Jacked Up Experience in the Icons Bar doing a live podcast. September 25th and 6th, we will be at HHN 30. You can find me in the park. I'm probably going to have some fun stuff for giveaways while I'm in Orlando, probably on both trips. The 30th also, we will be scheduled at Pirates of Emerson and may have a very special guest. After that, we got Scream Fest. Then we, on the 8th of October, 9th of October, somewhere around there, we will have Not Scary Farm coverage. The 15th, our 14th, we will have a Halloween Kills meetup. October 15th, Higbee Horror Hunt. 16th, Biohazard Con in Sacramento. 16th also, Ultimate Terror Scream Park. October 29th, Nightmare Before Christmas in concert in Burbank. And the last haunt of the year, October 30th this year, the day before Halloween itself, HHN 2021 in Universal Studios. I just am beyond man stoked to have the opportunity to do this. Tis, you know, the new logo you guys are gonna see, what I'm talking about when I say it. It's, you know, really got Revenge Oween heavily focused in the logo for this year's haunt season show. So it's a new logo, but man, I'm stoked. Hey, I'm also stoked for this panel. This panel that you guys get to hear today. We have Emwa, who composed Willy's Wonderland and was the voice of Willy the Weasel. Then you also have Alexander Taylor, who did Scream Queens and Dreamcatcher. And then you had Matthew James, who just composed the new Djinn movie. So all three of these guys all come on. They've all been also solo guests. You can find that if you go back into the Horrific Network Archives feed, which you can find. All you have to search for is Horrific Network, and you'll see a black and white logo. That is all old material that went out at the end, really, of July is the end of that feed. And now moving forward, you're in this feed. If you're hearing this, that means you're on the current feed. So welcome. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the support. We appreciate it. Also know that this podcast, it's a great time to say, is brought to you by Horror Pack. If you love horror films, you want them delivered straight to your house, you want someone to kind of choose for you what you should watch, dope movies always delivered straight to you, guess what? We have you covered with Horror Pack. Save 10% on your subscription too. Use code HORRIFIC at checkout and you are already winning by having them delivered straight to your door. You're winning again by saving 10%. Use code HORRIFIC at horrorpack.com and you're on your way, man. Anyway, enjoy this panel that we did at halfway to Halloween. Get ready for us returning to live coverage at Sinister Creature Con very soon on the 15th of August. And yeah, enjoy. We have with us three great composers that have done some projects recently in 2021 that you definitely, if you haven't checked out, you definitely need to, and you probably have already. But let's get them on to talk about the music that makes these movies so damn good. You've enjoyed them. First and foremost, not only did he compose all this thing, not only did he sing the words, but he's also the most lovable voice of your favorite new birthday character, composer and voice of Willie the Weasel himself. Emma, how you doing today, sir?
Thank you so much for the introduction, Jimmy. How are you?
Good, man. Good. This guy has done the composition of music for what is one of my favorite documentaries, Behind the Scenes of a Horror Film with Scream Queen, the story behind Nightmare Before Christmas 2, you know, is near and dear to our hearts. We were there when Mark kind of broke that to us. He also just did a really rad horror film called Dreamcatcher. Mr. Alexander Taylor, how you doing, man?
Fine, man. How are you? Thanks for having us on.
No problem. And a surprise, last but certainly not least, his new film is just out. I haven't gotten a check to check out anything but the trailer, but it looks just as good to keep the trend up with this new almost like a streaming renaissance of horror that the pandemic has presented. I definitely cannot wait to check out The Djinn, composed by Mr. Matthew James. How you doing, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm for you.
Good, good. And so, gentlemen, man, like, recently, Alex and MY, you guys have been on my show, and since having you guys on my show, I had another composer on my show, and he and I were talking, and now I'm like, the three of you guys, horror films, all in theaters right now, and I just wanted to talk to you guys about more so what goes on when you're composing this horror film, no matter what kind of the subgenre, because, you know, I've seen Alex's and Emma's, and, you know, I don't know if there's anything that kind of goes hand in hand with Willy's Wonderland, but both of those are in their own, you know, subgenres of horror. Matthew, yours looks like to be in another one. Like, do you guys enjoy that when you get a certain project and it is like within that own pocket, like how is that to when it comes to music composition? Like, is there a certain aspect of like, let's say it's a slasher film versus a zombie film? We can start with M1 and then kind of like work our way around, but like, is there a certain like subgenre, doesn't even necessarily have to be horror, but is there a subgenre that you like when you come across your desk for musical composition, you're like, man, like this is really like fun to do. I'm glad I got this one.
Absolutely. Willy's was that movie for me. It was the any opportunity to do something that unique and that cool, I think, is what every composer dreams of, really. It's very whimsical. It's different. It gives you the opportunity to explore, and you know, it spans many genres. It's just a really cool concept. So anytime something like that comes along, I'm super stoked. You know what I mean? Anything different, you know? That's about it. I'll let you go, Alex.
Yeah. Well, I just love doing horror in general. It's my favorite genre as a composer. That's kind of what I've been kind of throwing all of my energy into. And the best thing about horror is because it's been around for so long, it's actually like one of the first genres of film. I think the first film ever made was like, it was a silent film about like the devil or whatever. So through the years, it's been such a giant tent of genres of horror movies. And that's why I like doing them, because there's so many different, like you can go into sci-fi, you can go into like anything from like Sleepaway Camp to Hereditary. Count me in. Like, I love doing it. Yeah, that's pretty much, yeah, that's my worldview on horror.
What about you, Matthew?
Well, as the guy said, what's interesting is there are so many subgenres and kind of spinoffs of the different kinds of, the films and styles that it touches, you know, I mean, like in 2019, I did like a tech horror, like Alex is saying, like a sci-fi kind of heavy hitting thing that leaned more into the action kind of elements as opposed to overtly spooky. But we certainly had those like really dark, sinister, horrific moments. And then, for instance, with like fast forwarding all the way to today, which The Gin came out last week. I mean, that's a straight up, it's a period piece. It's set in 1989, and you know what that's going to sound like. So it's, you know, immediately thrown into that Carpenter-esque kind of synth, you know, without shame kind of vibe. So it's interesting that it encapsulates so much, you know, drama and suspense and thriller, and they're all in one. And I enjoy all the aspects of it.
It's funny having talked to you guys separately, and now Matthew, first like couple minutes of talking, in all three conversations, the name John Carpenter got brought up pretty early on in the conversation. Like,
he's inescapable, honestly. His music is
possible.
If you're a composer, especially in horror, you're going to come to battle with his music being in the temp tracks. And it's not a bad thing, because like, I adore Carpenter. It's probably obvious in my work, but like, yeah, Carpenter is his influence cannot be overstated for me, and probably for most of us working in electronic music, especially.
Certainly.
And it looks like we have our first comment, and I encourage anybody watching, please like comment your questions, whatever you got to say, as long as you're not a troll. We are seeing them, and we will definitely get to them as the, you know, the conversation progresses. Maria Cardoso says, I really enjoyed your movie. Let's assume she's talking to all three of you. She's going to our university soon. What was your experience in university as a musician? So let's just kind of, let's round that out to how did the three of you kind of like come up and learn about music composition to get to where you are right now?
Emma, do you want to go first? I'm going to Brady Bunch it and look up.
I went first last time. Why don't we start with Matt and go backwards?
Well, actually, I did not go to school formally. I'll be the first one to drop that ball on everybody. I didn't go to school formally for music. I did have some training when I was younger. I was a band geek, you know, when I was a kid. I didn't do, you know, post high school levels of study. I studied psychology. I had interest in actually going to med school. But as you guys probably know, it's kind of helpful to have a psychology degree. I'm not the first one to say that. I know some of the big dogs, even Hans and them, mentioned that that we often have our directors and our producers on the couch, so to speak. So it has kind of been serendipitous in that way. But no, I have not, and a lot of our colleagues will say to varying degrees that it's necessary or it's not. And I would vote for it's depends on the person.
Yeah. I guess I'll go next. I also did not study composition in college. I think we discussed this, Jimmy, the last time. I actually studied film directing. I went to really competitive film school in Ohio called Wright State. They like cut down to 10 people by junior year, so you really had to like be into it if you were like doing it. We'd start off like 100 people, and like I said, they narrowed down to 10. But throughout that process, I ended up scoring all of my films more out of like budgetary concerns, because I had like I wanted to be a rock star, if you can't tell, back in high school. So like I was the only one in our like film class that had any musical bone. So I ended up scoring mine. And then as a result, I ended up scoring everyone else's in the film program for like a good like 5 years. So I ended up like graduating having composed probably like 20 short films, not really realizing how invaluable that experience was. And I moved out here not thinking you could make a career as a composer, because it was my favorite part of composing or of filmmaking. It was too much fun. And I thought, there's no way. You can't, come on, you can't like get paid for this stuff. And then, you know, fast forward about a decade later and it's all I do. And it's my favorite thing. And I feel very lucky to do what I'm doing. And that's my answer. Now it's your turn.
I hate to break this to Maria, but you're talking to a bunch of uneducated composers.
Bunch of dummies.
I also have no degree in composing. But just like Matt and Alex, fell in love with music at a young age, continually pursued it, did everything I could to learn everything there was about it and how to do it. And, I just loved movies so much that was what I wanted to do. I mean, after watching stuff like Star Wars and Tim Burton films and things like that, I was just like, okay, this is it. Like, I mean, that was what I listened to, was those scores over like top 100 or bands or whatever. And I just always wanted to be able to do that, to be able to express myself that way. And I think picture and music work so intrinsically because they one takes the other where the other can't go on its own. And so it's just an unbelievable relationship. And I wanted to be a part of it, basically. So that's about it.
Right on. And with that too, it was interesting, at least for me, going into film composition, not doing musical writing, but film writing, and then constructing a scene and everything. Like, I never had a desire to go to school for it until I did my first one, and then I wanted to learn. So it may be an instance of which you may not have a desire to get an education, a formal education, until you are on an indie film, whatever level. And even if, these three guys are the perfect example, even if you don't, go to a formal education or, my day job, high school teacher. So in the day of like a rejection letter, like even if you get a rejection letter, like these three are perfect example of like, just don't give up, man. Like don't give up on, if you really want to do it, you really want to write music, you really want to compose for or any other film, you can do it. Like, if you got the drive, you're going to do it. I guarantee you. One of my production crew, honestly, just had a question in the chat. He's wondering, for you, Alex, did you prefer like straight up horror film versus documentary as far as music writing?
Oh yeah, I actually have never gotten that question. I do like both. Horror is my jam, so to speak. It's what I like to do the most. But it's funny because I guess my most popular work is for a documentary. Now, while the documentary is about a horror film, it's not about a horror film. It's actually about the actor and what happened to him, like in the mid '80s during the AIDS epidemic. So it's actually a very serious score. I can't say that I definitely do prefer horror, but like, I think the question is, how do I approach composing? Is that what it is? Approach composing for a documentary versus a film?
I guess which one you prefer?
Oh, I guess I prefer doing horror, but like if it's something that's like in the horror field, like I'm doing a documentary right now about the Paranormal Activity franchise. Actually, that's pretty cool. I'm not quite sure when that's coming out. Actually, I can't really make that announcement, I guess. I don't want to, like, I signed an NDA, so hopefully I didn't blow it just now. But, I guess I prefer the horror side. But the other question, it seems like it's how do I approach composing for a documentary versus a film, if I'm reading it correctly? At the end of the day, it doesn't really change, because you're just trying to help tell a story. And so the process remains the same, I'd say.
Matt, I gotta ask you, man, with your film that just came out right now, with the it kind of really pertains to all three of you, but I'll ask you, just because you are now coming out on the tail end, like this event is meant to really be, get us motivated, get us happy to be on the tail end, and hopefully excited where we can actually do a Comic-Con halfway to Halloween in person next year. But, you're seeing this industry kind of open back up again. What was your experience like getting to do the gin, though, man? Like, that whole premise is one that it's like, it's been done in certain ways, or it's been done in certain films before, but it's always kind of like one of those ones that it's like the stepbrother horror film where everyone kind of likes it, but they don't want to say it's the top, you know, in their top. But you getting to put a new spin on this, how was it for you, man?
It was good, man. I mean, we, so speaking of that, like the tail end of like the, you know, the pandemic and all that, you know, we started work on this. I mean, God, it's been almost 2 years now that I think about it, because of the different hiatuses that came up. I actually just thought about this the other day. I mean, I delivered stems to the dub wearing a mask in my studio. Funny anecdote, right? So this was like last year, right when the shit hit the fan and none of us knew what this thing was. And I'm sitting in the studio there, like, I feel like I should be like in Breaking Bad, you know, attire or something, that we're not sure what's happening. And if this thing is something that's like, you know, sci-fi level where it's waiting outside of the stop sign, you know, the roving gang of bandits ready to infiltrate your system. But, it was a challenge as far as that went, to like, you know, to try to make something fresh, because like everybody wants to like, oh, we want to hear the synth sound, blah, blah, blah. But then you run into the peril of potentially being derivative of like, oh, you go, as soon as anybody hears like, you know, a monophonic synth that is remotely reminiscent of like an Arturia or an old Moog or Yamaha series, they're like, Stranger Things. Yeah. Not realizing that, you know, I'm 40-ish practically. So it's like, dude, I mean, I grew up with the Casios and those things. I mean, the first thing I learned how to play was like one of the first things I learned how to play on the keyboard was the Halloween theme, because my dad was a horror nut. So it's like, everybody calm down. But yeah, as far as that goes, like just trying to make something kind of hybrid, which I felt like I was able to do with the guys, you know, we lean into some of that stuff and we're not shy about it. But most people seem to enjoy it as far as that went. But yeah, it's great to kind of be back. It's nice that I went and saw it in a theater, which is awesome. I mean, like you really can't ask for more to see that your stuff on the big screen when it's like everything's been closed. So
yeah, that's really great. Lucky for you, because you actually came out right when, because like I had my four biggest projects that I've ever done all came out in the last goddamn year, and yeah. I couldn't go to any premiere. I know you can agree with me, Willy's Wonderland. Yeah,
big bummer. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, like a Dreamcatcher or Willy's Wonderland premiere. Like you, those are two films that scream amazingly dope movie premiere, and that like you missed out. Like that sucks.
Yeah, I mean it happens, but like I said, I don't know about you guys, like work is being bottlenecked right now, like everything's coming in at once, which is, it's a good thing, but it's also like sleeping at the studio kind of thing is like happening now. But yeah, man, I'm glad we're back. And yeah, Matt, I'm bummed I couldn't make it to the premiere. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good, man. I'm going to hate you forever because
that's
of it.
Fair. That's fair.
With this now, it seems like we have a couple. Oh, we have one. Emma, do you know, all three of you guys, do you guys know when the movie soundtrack is going to be available on disc and or are they, it seems like now we're in the digital age, are they going to release your guys' soundtracks on a physical disc?
Well, first of all, I just want to give a shout out. I saw the name there. So that's Noel the Mole, Mulgrew from, Ireland, who's a good little, Twitter friend of mine. So what's up, Noel? Just want to say hi. It's a good question. So, yeah, I guess I'm not at liberty to talk about it right now, actually, but, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we're working on some stuff and some physical copies of things that are, possible, but, stay tuned is all I got to say.
Like Alexander, how about with Dreamcatcher? Is that
so? Dreamcatcher is actually it's being released through 1984 Publishing. It's already out. Actually, it's on anywhere where you can stream. I don't think we're doing a physical release of anything for Dreamcatcher, but we do have stuff for Scream Queen, which. Like note for note, release this on, we have a CD, we have a vinyl, And we actually have a cassette coming out for Scream Queen, which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
I think that was just, you can start pre-ordering as of today. That's all from 1984 for the vinyl and the cassette. But the CD is Note for Note Publishing. I've done a few things with them. They're great.
Right on. And Matthew, do you know, are they going to release the Gen soundtrack in any kind of like physical medium?
Actually, as being a latecomer to this, the soundtrack actually dropped today, the 21st. Yeah, it's on Apple Music and Amazon and all the other applicable outlets. So, yeah, it just came out today.
Right on.
Nice.
Thanks, man. I'm hoping for a physical print. We want to do a vinyl, so that remains to be determined because I think this film kind of warrants it. So, it's all available on streaming and all the usual suspects. So thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to get Willie's and the Gin on vinyl. Both of you guys also, I have listened to both of your work. Freaking congrats. I love it. I'm just happy to be on this panel with you guys.
Oh wow, really. Thanks so much, man. That's awesome.
Thanks, man. Thanks for getting me here.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear him say, I'm hoping to get it on vinyl. I'm curious, you know, production side, that's one thing, you know, with film that became like the huge, you know, godsend for indie film production is digital film production and not having to, for the cost of actual physical film, you know, is insanely expensive. In music, you know, just in that what he said, you know, I'm hoping that we can get it out on a vinyl, you know, the production cost of doing something like that, like what are we talking versus the input of I'm gonna hire a crew to put it out digitally on Apple Music versus I'm gonna hire out a team of people to produce this thing in compact disc or vinyl. Like how big of a box office, you know, is that for a composer to get their work turned into that from, let's say, a release?
Well, if you're lucky, someone will approach you and be like, hey, we'd like to work with you. We'd like to release your soundtrack.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like when it comes to like a physical release, you usually have to get like an artist to do like cover art if you're not using like the poster from the movie.
Right.
Which I would usually recommend, because the thing about vinyl collectors, I'm one of them, is that like you kind of you like the whole feeling of exclusivity. So you kind of want like a piece of original art from the movie that isn't necessarily the movie's poster. That'll cost money, graphic designer. And then someone needs to specifically mix the music or master the music for vinyl. So you need to do that if you don't have that skill set. I do not have that skill set, so I always have to go to a couple other people. So I don't know. Sometimes it can run. I'm actually not quite sure what the price is. Luckily, I've never had to fork over the money to do it. But
is that something with you guys too? With you guys making the film the way that you different, you know, companies will structure a contract differently. When you guys get to a certain level and you're signed on to compose a movie like that, like when you're signing on, I got to imagine you're signing the rights. Yeah. I'm looking at MWA, just like, I'm imagining when you signed on, like you're signing that, right? Like if they were like, you know what, we're not going to release the Willy's Wonderland soundtrack. You couldn't go in, you know, 5-10 years down the line, be like, you know what, I think I'm going to release that unless you bought the rights back from them. Right?
Most film is work for hire. So they own everything and it's completely up to them. After you hand over the masters, you know.
We got a question. How much time? You know, this is another good one for the three of you. How much time did Willy's Wonderland? But we could say, you know, Alexander for on average, and Matthew, you and the Gin. How long did it take, Emma, for you to compose Willy's Wonderland?
The bulk of it was about 2.5 months, which I think is pretty standard. The film was divided up into 5 reels, and each reel was 2 weeks turnaround. What made Willy's unique was obviously the pandemic brought a whole lot of, there's no music department on Willy's. So I had to do pretty much everything, as far as music editing, everything. And then also doing the songs singing the songs, executing the songs, getting the recordings of the actors who also sang, getting that all together. So there was a little bit of an extra time there that was added on. But most of all, it was pretty much done within probably, I would say, about 3.5 months. But there was also just, limited VFX staff and just limited staff to get everything else done. So things kind of dragged on, edit changes happened later, than they normally would have. And so there was a little bit of that as we were just trying to navigate the pandemic. But typically I think you have about 3 months to turn around a film, 2.5 to 3 months.
Alexander?
That pretty much covers it. Yeah, I it depends on the project. Sometimes it's like a run and gun. Like you have just 4 weeks and that is it. Like you have to deliver stems and and you don't really have time to really think. Like you have to just use yourself. That is always a little more stressful, obviously. I'm in the middle of one of those right now. Best case scenario, it's usually like he said, like about 2 to 3 months. 4 to 10 weeks is kind of what I like. Scream Queen was different. That was about like a 2-year process because it was a doc and it kept like getting re-edited and shuffled around until they found the story. We thought we had the story many times, so I scored several different versions of it, which is why there's tons of music just on the cutting room floor that is like, I probably wrote like 200 minutes of music for that doc. But it was a blast. That's my answer.
Yeah, to add to what Alex is saying, Alex, remember when we should mention that we did Arkansas, which had to be done. It was I suppose it's appropriate to say that it was a rescore for the international because the distributors were not satisfied, I believe, as the story has it. That was rewritten 30 some odd minutes of music in 4 days.
Yeah, that was,
so that was terrible.
Yeah.
That was like literally like he's talking about sleeping at the studio. That was that's probably the rarity though. That's like a super rarity. The gin took, I would say if you condense, it was similarly because of the pandemic and because of changes in like VFX and picture and it being such a, it's an indie film. It's a small budget and the guys wanted to get it, absolutely on the nose. And that's why it took a minute. But I think if I were to really condense it, the actual time physically spent waiting for new cuts or whatever we were doing, probably about a month and a half or so, month and a half of physical writing, maybe, but it took us a year, to do the whole thing because it was like, oh, hold on, the world's ending. Wait, no, it's not, so it was like back and forth. So, to piggyback on what these guys said, I would say that's a good sweet spot, 2 months, especially if you're working on anything bigger. And if you have anything in the order of 60 to 80 minutes of music to write or more, you need that. You'd hope to get that.
Yeah.
When you guys are sitting down and you're writing these different musical compositions for these films, they're so unique in their own right from, The Rave at Dreamcatcher to the 6 Feet Weasel beating the hell out of Nicolas Cage to do every time I play it. I can't stop playing. Ears, shoulders, knees and toes. Is there a scene that you guys, particularly in all three of the movies, that you were like, man, like, I can't wait to listen to this scene the way that it's supposed to be? Like, we're talking the movie theater, we're talking the big ass, system, we're talking, like, is there a certain song in Willy's Wonderland, Dreamcatcher, or The Gin where you're like, this is when the day comes when, there's a theatrical audience for this film, speaking, optimistically, this is the song that everyone's going to be like, yeah. Is there a certain one there?
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, for Dreamcatcher, there's a certain point in the middle of the movie where everything kind of changes the direction of the entire film. And I can't, it's a big spoiler, so I can't really say what it is, but the track is called Painted Devil. And it was cool because, like, in the initial, like, when we were editing the movie, there wasn't really supposed to be much music there. It was supposed to be, like, a lot of, like, calamity and just chaos from the actors on set. But I wrote this track, and it was, like, a big gamble. It was, like, the first time where, like, I completely, for this particular project, I kind of just said, like, fuck it to the temp track, and did my own thing. And they actually, for this scene now, it's just my track. They cut out like all the audio from everyone. And now that's just that one blaring, which, like, as a composer, you're like, yes. Cause I was worried, cause I delivered the track and I was like, I don't know if JJ is going to like this. And thankfully he did. And after that, he actually, there was a lot more hole in ones after that, because he let me kind of like, we found the sound at that track. And then after that, that's kind of where it all changed. For Scream Queen, it's the end of the movie, when Mark goes on about how he doesn't want this to happen to anyone else. It's called People Like Me. That track is very emotional to me, and I still actually kind of get choked up when I hear it. I love that documentary so much. I'll let you guys go now. Sorry.
For Willie's, I think, gosh, there was some cool moments I was really looking forward to. There's a few of them that I was looking forward to seeing in the theater, which unfortunately never happened. But the, I think the one that meant a lot to me was the end fight with Willie and Nick. Cause that was the riskiest, sort of thing that I did, in the sense of, you know, most of the time it's power chords and Nick just beating the crap out of these things, right? Yeah. But when it got to Willie, and I don't know if it's because I was voicing Willie, you know, but I really just kind of felt like Nick was the villain, you know what I mean? And and I'm watching Willie getting battered and I'm feeling for him, you know. I was like, literally, like, this is really sad. And it kind of reminded me of like Return of the Jedi, where, you know, he's whacking Vader down and there's that really beautiful, sad music happening. And so I wanted to give Willie that. So I did this, this cue. And if you listen to it, instead of going to these electric guitars, like it has every time he's fought everyone else, it goes to strings and choir, and it becomes sad. And, as you watch this child mascot, this hero to children, be demolished by this insane sociopath, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I was really hoping to say, because it was definitely the biggest, it had the biggest scope of any of the other cues, I think, that were done in the film. And but, you know, I got to see it at the drive-in on a speaker that was one by one, you know, hanging out of my window, which sucked. But I mean, it's still cool to see in the drive-in, but, you know, I really wanted to hear it. But that, I would say that would be the track for me.
What's the name of it on the soundtrack?
Willie Weasel.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I thought that was it. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm putting up the call now. I don't care what platform you're listening to this and or watching this. I'm looking dead in the camera. I'll take my glasses off so everyone knows I'm super serious. However you're watching this interview right now, if you are an artist, I want you to understand something. I want you to draw Willie the Weasel and Nick Cage in this scene from Return of the Jedi. You draw that scene for me. I don't care what your price is. You DM Horrific Network. That is something that needs to exist.
Nice.
Yeah, the thing with this too,
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's hard to point there. Yeah,
it is. You got me all off track with the damn Star Wars Willie the Weasel. Go ahead, Matthew. I'm sorry.
No worries. I guess my favorite, especially since I just saw it, good refresher last night. There's definitely some oh shit moments, if I can say that. Like, kind of like we played around with some, you know, jump scares that you kind of don't anticipate, and we lead you into certain kind of trickery that doesn't, I would say that one of my favorite cues is called Mom. If that doesn't give too much away, hope guys, I'm sorry if I did. But I would say there's a couple of those moments where you're like, oh my God, what just happened? And it was really cool to see it, like I said, at a proper theater yesterday where it was playing at concert volume. And it was like, oh my God. It was really overwhelming. They almost had it a little bit too loud in there, dare I say. But that's better than not loud enough, right, guys?
Oh, now you're just bragging.
No, it was like, well, I mean, Will is like such a, our mixer is awesome. Our Will Tabano is a, I've worked with him multiple times on the other films I did. And I know you guys probably had the experience too. He's just like, he's a score lover. Sometimes I have to be like, hey man, you might want to turn that down a bit. We're losing the dialogue. You know what I mean? Like, which is rare for us to say.
Jealous.
But, he's like, it's just so big. It needs to play big. I'm like, okay, man. But like, you know, calm down. But, yeah, no, he's great. But I would say, yeah, those, well, and then it's such a cool film overall, especially when you find out how we did it and the budget they did it on and how they did it and in a very, very, very restrained manner, and what they kind of juiced out of it is impressive. But I would say probably that the track Mom was most like, oh, wow. To see that, it's like, wow, okay. So,
well, to close it out for us, you know, you guys, you're so, you know, Alexander kind of said, like, the work, it seems like things are coming back up. I know, just from being done with school and being on the sheets, looking on the outside to start off, I see more and more industry, you know, job listings seem like they're starting to come in. So I can imagine that, like, the exciting thing is, like, more and more projects are starting to, you know, get made, get produced. What is next for the three of you guys? We can start up top. When, you know, is there a way for everyone? I know a lot of people, I know you're really good about reaching out, like, on Twitter and interacting with fans and stuff, but what's the best way for everybody to keep track to see what you got coming out next?
Nice. Real quick, I just wanted to give a shout out. I saw a couple of things pop up here for Melanie Dashiel. She's a sweetheart from Twitter. She's in Mexico City. She's an amazing artist who did some incredible drawings of Willie. I just wanted to give her a shout out real quick. Besides that, you know, I got to tell you, I don't talk about new projects. And maybe these guys can agree with me. I'm not sure, but it's my attitude that nothing, you have nothing until it's printed.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's so true.
So you can have four projects going. You can be attached to, you can be working on, you just never know with film, with commercials, with anything. There's just so many moving parts that I never even really told anybody about Willie's until it was done, you know, because it just is the way it is. So when it's printed, well, no. But other than that, I have some other possibilities, but I feel like it's almost a jinx to ever really talk about anything, you know, until it's printed.
I actually, not to cut you off, Alexander, I wanted to ask you, man, you've done some work for like Roblox games or something?
No, I did. If you look up Roblox's story, their big thing about their story, where the creator talks about it and all that kind of stuff. I did that video. It has several million views on YouTube now, but it's kind of a very, you know, electronic-y kind of, you know, backstory. It was a really cool little thing that they did. Yeah.
That is the thing that we're doing later on tonight, actually, is a live stream through one of their haunted houses. And like the level of like game design, as far as, I've always been like a huge nerd of like the Sim theme park stuff, Roller Coaster Tycoon all the way up, and the level of game design is what they do on that server is something I'll never have the patience for. But their haunted houses, all the way down to the different like soundtracks, it's pretty rad stuff, man.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll send you the link if you want to check it out. It's called The Story of Roblox, and it was like a, not a documentary, but it was like a little, you know, film that they made. about the story of it and the history and everything. And it's narrated by the owner who started it. And it was a really cool, well-received little piece. Yeah.
Right. Alexander, man, where can everybody take a look at you know, what you've got coming out next?
Yeah, I'm always on Instagram, Alexander Taylor Composer. I usually post a lot of things about like the fun music stuff I'm working on too. Got a lot of films coming out that I have done, so I can talk about them. A short called Witch Hunt, The Rule of Three just premiered on Alter. Another film called No Filter I'm doing currently, that I'm about to finish up this week. Unknown Dimension, The Story of Paranormal Activity. That's the name of the Paranormal Activity documentary that I'm hopefully finishing up next week. And a coming-of-age sort of like queer vampire film from out of Australia called Sovam. I'm like halfway through that, and then I pick back up on that next month. So those are the ones that I for sure can talk about. But yeah, that's kind of what I have going on right now.
Awesome. Very good. And Matt, I know Jen just came out, but do you got something, you know, coming out next down the pipeline?
I am working on, thanks to Alex, actually, I'm working on a, an Italian, feature film right now by a new director. Her name's, Valentina Vittorzi. It's called Whistle and I'll Come to You. It's based on a old ghost story from an English writer. It's a period piece set in the 1900s, so it's a total early 1900s, turn of the century. So it's a total departure, which is, I'm sure you guys enjoy too. It's like truly orchestral, like pastoral, classical music. So to go from doing, you know, the hard-hitting bops of like the 80s Carpenter kind of vibe or the gin to this, it's great. Outside of that, I have a few potential, again, like Emwa said, some things that they're not quite there yet. Some other interesting stuff that should happen this summer that look interesting. A dystopian, actually a virus film, which is like totally my jam, as morbid as that sounds. And then hopefully maybe another one, a horror film. And but yeah, The Gin just released last week. It's in select theaters and it's on all your on demand and it's on IFC. Soundtrack out today, same as Alex. My Instagram handle is Matthew James Composer, so you can find me there and be weird.
Right on, man. And yeah, that we can end it. We got one more comment here. Congratulations, Emma, on Willy's Wonderland. We got to mention that one for sure. Coming to Hulu, that is a big deal, especially right now when you couldn't necessarily get to a movie theater to see the thing, or maybe you couldn't find it on an actual physical disc. There you go. It's on Hulu. That's a huge win for horror fans for sure. Anyway, check out Willy's Wonderland. Check out Dreamcatcher. If you haven't seen Scream Queen from a few years back, check out that documentary. The reason why Alexander just said it touches him that story is a hell of a story. And definitely, if you're able, go see The Gin in a theater, if it's in a theater near you, and or check it out streaming too. But you three gentlemen, I thank you very much for taking time to get started on this event. And I appreciate it and giving us some insight as to what goes on into the music of the things that bring us the nightmares, man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah,
guys, honor to be on the panel with you guys for sure.
Same with you, awesome, buddy.
Definitely. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You too. I'll see you.
All right.
So there you go, man. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. I think it was a pretty cool one with those three guys. And yeah, check out their three films. Definitely fun watches, all three of them. Anyway, man, thank you very much again for listening on our new feed. Tons of stuff coming, as mentioned at the top, with Sinister Creature Con and Haunt Season, and just getting back out, getting ready. I didn't even talk about the fact that at the end of August I will be going back to Silicon Valley Con, so definitely will have some content for everybody there throughout the throughout the weekend there. We're gonna hit the ground running, man, and it's not going to stop. We just posted the end of season 2 of Writing with Horrific, so you're gonna hear that tomorrow upon the airing of this show. It'll be that podcast will go up tomorrow. Then, you know, Campfire Chronicles, which is, you know, winding down here the last few weeks of season 6. Hard to believe we're about ready to wrap that up at the end of the month. Then we have the beginning of the haunt season, man. And we have a couple new shows and new things coming to the YouTube channel that I'm excited to talk about. Maybe even as soon as this week, we'll start talking about that as we get ready to formally celebrate our 7th birthday. So thank you, man, and take care, everybody.